Welcome to The Deep Dive. We're all about peeling back the layers on fascinating sources, finding those insights that can, well, really reframe how you see things. You know those moments in life where everything just clicks differently? Maybe a single conversation, something unexpected happens, and bam, your whole sense of who you are feels transformed. Today, we're diving into one of those moments, a really powerful one from the ancient world, Genesis chapter 17, verses 1 through 5. It's this incredible encounter. After 13 years of silence, God reappears, reaffirms a covenant, and completely redefines a man's identity with a new name. Our mission here is to really pull out the key insights from the original Hebrew text. You'll see how understanding the original language adds, well, surprising layers of meaning to this pivotal moment.
It really does. The source text here is just packed with these Hebrew treasures, letting us dig much deeper than the standard translations. We'll be looking at how identity gets shaped by these divine encounters, especially, you know, after such a long wait. It's often in these ancient texts we find those real aha moments about life's big questions, purpose, identity, who we're meant to be.
Okay, let's jump in. First one kicks us off. When Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to him and said, "I am El Shaddai, walk before me and be blameless." 99. And like you said, 13 years of silence since Ishmael's birth.
Yeah.
That's a long time to wait. And God doesn't just reappear. He introduces himself with this new title, Ani El Shaddai. I am El Shaddai. Now, I've always heard El Shaddai as Almighty. Sounds powerful, obviously. But is there maybe more nuance there, especially given the context, that long wait? Does it speak to Abram's potential doubts?
That's a great point, bringing in the 13 years. It's really key.
Okay.
You know, what's fascinating about Ade is that scholars actually debate its precise meaning. Almighty captures that power for sure, but some link it to the Hebrew word Hod.
What does that mean?
Well, it can mean mountain or, interestingly, breast.
Okay, mountain, breast. How does that connect?
Think symbolically. A mountain implies unshakable strength, reliability. Right,
solid foundation.
And the breast imagery suggests nourishment, provision, sufficiency. So whether you lean towards Almighty, God of the mountain, or God of sufficiency, the core message hitting Abram right then is profound. I am enough for you.
Mm-hmm.
After 13 years, maybe feeling like time is running out, God basically says, I've got this. I am fully sufficient for everything that's about to happen with this covenant. It's a powerful reassurance.
I am enough for you. Wow. Yeah, that really does hit differently after such a long silence, doesn't it? Almost the ultimate reassurance. And then comes the command, walk before me and be blameless. The Hebrew is hithalik lapanei weyeh tamim. These sound pretty serious, not just suggestions. When we hear blameless, we often think perfection, right? Which feels, well, impossible. What do these words really mean for Abram?
Yeah, that's a crucial point about translation. Let's break it down. Hithalik, it's a reflexive verb. It literally means walk yourself. So it's not just about one action, like taking a single perfect step. It suggests a continuous way of living.
A lifestyle.
Exactly. A lifestyle lived transparently right there before God's face, an ongoing, wholehearted thing. And then tamim, you're right. Blameless sounds like sinless to us. But tamim in Hebrew means more like whole, complete, having integrity.
Oh, okay. So not flawless, but integrated.
Precisely. Living an undivided life. Your insides match your outsides. Wholeheartedness. So God's calling Abram to this authentic, continuous, integrated life in his presence, consistent character, not just perfect performance. It's about inner coherence, maybe.
Inner coherence. I like that. It feels more achievable, yet still deeply challenging. And this wholeheartedness then leads right into verse 2, that I may make my covenant between me and you and may multiply you greatly.
So this divine appearance, this revelation of El Shaddai, it has a clear purpose, the covenant. What kind of covenant are we talking about here? Is this like a negotiation? Does Abram get to, you know, state his terms?
Well, this is where the Hebrew verb choice is really illuminating. The word for make in make my covenant is vedena.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes from the root natan, which means to give.
To give, not make as in construct together. Exactly. God isn't saying, okay, Abram, let's hammer out a deal. He's saying, I give my covenant to you. This puts all the emphasis on grace, on it being a gift, sheer generosity. It's not a bargain Abram earns or qualifies for. It's a divine bestowal flowing straight from El Shaddai, the God who is completely sufficient and apparently incredibly generous.
Wow. Okay. giving versus negotiating, that shifts the whole dynamic, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So if it's a gift, what does that mean for Abram's side of things? Does he still have responsibilities?
Oh, absolutely. A gift doesn't mean no responsibility. Think about it. If someone gives you something truly precious, you don't just toss it aside.
Right. You cherish it. Take care of it.
Exactly. So Abram's response isn't about earning it, but about living into that gift. His part, the walk before me and be whole, hit Halak lipanewa hitomim, becomes less like fulfilling contractual obligation.
But more like
a grateful response, an appreciative, integrated walk with the giver. It shifts from obligation to devotion, maybe.
Obligation to devotion. That makes a lot of sense. And Abram's immediate reaction in verse 3 really underscores that, I think. Then Abram fell on his face.
Yeah.
You can just picture it, this 99-year-old man just completely prostrate. The Hebrew is Weyipol Avram al Panar. What's the significance there? What does that posture communicate?
Oh, it speaks volumes. Just sheer, profound humility. And you have to remember who Abram was. His name meant exalted father. He wasn't just anybody. He was a patriarch, a respected leader.
Right. A big deal in his world.
For him to fall flat on his face down on the ground, becoming like a carpet before El Shaddai.
Right.
It shows this overwhelming sense of God's presence and power. It's total surrender, a complete acknowledgement of divine authority and perhaps the sheer grace of this moment after the silence. It's also maybe a posture that prepares him, strips away any old self-reliance, clears the ground for what God's about to say.
Right. Total humility, total surrender. And it's from that position, face down, that God continues in verse 4. Behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be the father of a multitude of nations. So the promise here really explodes, doesn't it? It's not just about one heir anymore. Tell us more about this multitude of nations, of Hamon Goyim. What does that word Hamon add?
Hamon is potent. It's not just many or a group. It implies a multitude, yes, but even more, like a noisy throng, a tumultuous crowd.
A noisy throng, like bustling, full of life.
Exactly. Think vibrancy, energy, diversity. This isn't just about descendants. It's about nations, plural, buzzing with life. It really hammers home how incredibly expansive God's plan is for Abram. Way beyond just his immediate family or even a single people group, it hints at a global impact.
Wow. Okay. From a single aged man to a noisy throng of nations. Which brings us straight to verse 5, the absolute core of the identity shift. No longer shall your name be Abram, but your name shall be Abraham. This is it. The literal renaming Abram, exalted father, becomes Avraham, father of a multitude. It seems like just one little letter added in the middle there in Hebrew. Is there significance to which letter is added?
Oh, absolutely. This is where it gets incredibly profound. That small added letter is the Hebrew letter H.
Okay.
Not just any H. It's the same letter that begins God's own sacred covenantal name, YHWH, Yahweh.
Wait. Really? The H from God's name?
Yes. And Jewish commentators have long pointed this out. It's like God is sharing a part of his own divine covenantal essence with Abram. He's literally breathing his purpose, his promise, into Abram's very identity.
So it's more than just a name reflecting the promise.
It's embedding the divine promise into his name. Abram, the somewhat limited exalted dad, focused maybe on personal status, becomes Abraham, the expansive father of nations, intrinsically linked to God's vast unfolding plan. His very being is redefined by God's covenant breath.
That connection to YHWH, I had never seen that.
Yeah.
That's incredible. It's like God is knitting his own identity into Abram's. And it makes sense of the timing too, doesn't it? You mentioned before Abram thought Ishmael was the fulfillment back in chapter 16, but God waits 13 years, then reveals El Shaddai and says essentially, no, think bigger, so much bigger that your current name can't even hold it. We need to expand you.
Precisely. The old container, Abram, couldn't hold the new reality. God waited until the moment was right, perhaps until Abram was ready, through age and waiting and humility, to grasp the sheer scale of it. It shows that sometimes our own perspective, our own sense of self, needs that divine stretching, that redefinition to align with a purpose far greater than we imagined. Your capacity has to grow for the destiny.
Yeah. And that final phrase in verse 5 drives it home. Kefaman goyim netatika, for I have made you the father of many nations. You mentioned the verb there, netatika. What's key about the tense? It sounds already done.
Yes. That's the perfect tense in Hebrew. It often describes something completed, settled, a done deal. So when God says, I have made you, or I have given you to be the father of many nations, he's speaking it into reality right then.
Even though Abraham doesn't even have Isaac yet.
Exactly. Even though the physical fulfillment is still future, God's word, especially within covenant, has the power to establish the reality. It's like the promise becomes a present fact by the power of divine declaration, an unshakable truth established in that renaming moment.
Incredible. Not just, I will make you, but I have made you. Declaration is reality. Okay, let's pull back and gather these gems. What have we unearthed here? We started with Eladeh, the God who is enough, reassuring after silence. Then the call to hit Halaklapane, walk yourself before me, a continuous integrated life, not just isolated actions, and to be tamim whole, complete, having integrity.
Right. And the covenant itself, Velana, I give it, emphasizing grace, not negotiation.
Then the promise expands dramatically to Is'af Hamon Goyim, father of a noisy multitude of nations.
And the core transformation, Avram becomes Avram, with that added eight from God's own name, embedding divine purpose.
Yeah, changing exalted father to the father of a multitude.
And finally, Nateka, I have made you, the perfect tense declaring the future promise as a present reality.
It's amazing how much depth is packed in just these few verses when you look at the Hebrew.
It really paints a picture, doesn't it? Divine sufficiency, El Shaddai meeting human destiny and completely reshaping it through covenant. God doesn't just make promises. He rewrites identity itself to fit the promise. And that paradox. Abram falls flat in humility, face to the ground, and it's precisely then he's lifted up with this name that carries nations. That's the kind of transformation that happens in that walking before God space.
What an incredible journey through just five verses. It really shows you the power packed into a single divine encounter, how identity can be utterly redefined, and how humility can open the door to such an expansive vision. It definitely pushes us to think beyond maybe our own perceived limits.
And that brings us to a final thought, something for you, our listeners, to maybe chew on. What does it mean for us today when our own sense of identity feels maybe too small for a potential or purpose we feel nudged towards? Or when those moments where we feel humbled, maybe fall flat on our face metaphorically, actually lead to unexpected shifts in our life's direction? How might we recognize or understand the power of a naming in our own lives, even a metaphorical one where a greater purpose is breathed into who we are and what we might be called to do?
That's a great question to ponder. How does our identity need to expand to hold the future we sense? Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into Genesis 17. We really hope you keep exploring these fascinating ideas. Until next time, keep digging.